Chapter 7, Domitian. After the death of Nero, the Christians obtained rest for a few years. We know that Vespasian, who at that time was with his army before the gates of Jerusalem, had been acclaimed emperor by his soldiers, while in Rome a rival emperor had ascended the throne, and that then Vespasian hastened to Rome and after a short time defeated his rival emperor. Thereby Jerusalem was given a year and a half to repent. Vespasian did not permit the persecution of the Christians. Some were even held in high esteem by him. When Vespasian died, and when his son Titus, the conqueror of Jerusalem, became emperor, then the Christians also lived in rest and peace. Alas, Titus did not reign long, only a few years. Then death put an end to his successful reign. During the time of Vespasian and Titus, Christianity increased greatly. Christians were even found in the palace of the emperor. After the reign of Titus, his brother Domitian ascended the throne. Domitian was also a son of Vespasian. But alas, the noble spirit of his father did not dwell in him. A dark time dawned for the Christians because the persecution again broke out in all its severity. Domitian was a brute. He was a thoroughly wicked person. He trusted no one. He saw danger everywhere and in everyone. He always lived in fear that they would murder him. He ever feared that a revolt would break out. For instance, he had them investigate if there were still descendants of David's family. Oh? Why? Because once he had heard that one day a great king would arise out of David's family. That thought alarmed him. Oh, suppose that was true. Suppose that king was born during his reign. Then he would be a dead man. For that reason, he had them trace that old royal house. And sure enough, a few Jews were found who were descendants of that old famous royal family. Immediately he commands that they must appear before him. How those plain people must have trembled. Look, there they stand before the mighty emperor. No, they are not rich and important. We would not think that they were descendants of that noble royal house. Their hands are covered with callous from hard work. Those people tremble, but they are not aware that just their state of poverty, wherein they are, preserves their life. Domitian beholds them with a searching look. He observes those coarse workmen's hands, and he realizes that he has nothing to fear from these people. He sends them away, and his heart is at ease. I told you this purposely to show you how scared Domitian was. The emperor of Rome was not happy. He had thousands of innocent people put to death. The Christians were also cruelly persecuted by him. Those Christians to him were dangerous. At least so he thought. He feared for that. And really, why? What dangerous things were done by them? It is well known that the Roman emperors had themselves worshipped as God. All the Roman subjects had to worship the statue of the emperor and offer before it. But the Christians did not do that. They only bent their knees before God, the God of heaven and earth, who lives forever. Domitian thought and said, "Don't you see, those Christians cannot be trusted. They refuse to obey me. They refuse to obey the laws and commands which I give to my subjects. Away with them." He raged fiercely against the Christians in the city of Rome. Hundreds were banished. Their properties were declared confiscated. That means their possessions, their gold and silver, became the property of the state. Hence he stole those things. He could make good use of that money for his wicked feasts. To make merry always costs money. Now then, with that money of the Christians, he paid for everything that he needed for his feasts. He had his own cousin, who was a Christian, put to death. Not only in Rome, but bloody persecutions were started also in other places of the large Roman Empire. During his reign, the Apostle John was banished to the small island of Patmos. Oh, who is able to count the number of Christians that were killed during his reign? That number is only known to God. Who also died the martyr's death at this time? Timothy, of whom we read time and again in the Bible. Paul took him along on his second missionary tour. According to various writers, Timothy had been active at Ephesus. In that city stood the great temple of Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians. When Paul preached there, an uproar was almost started because the silversmiths who made small temples of Diana and magic coins were out of work. For since the preaching of the Apostle Paul, the people no longer believed those things. This we have told you in the Bible history. Years later, when Timothy preached the gospel at that place, the silversmiths raised another uproar. With that uproar, they made Timothy prisoner and stoned him. In this way, that faithful preacher has entered into eternal glory. In many large cities in our country are stadiums. Perhaps there are some who do not know what a stadium is. Then listen for a moment. When there is a football game, then thousands and thousands of people go there to watch it. They want to see that. 22 adult people run after a ball, and then they try to kick that ball into a net. If they succeed, then a thundering applause ascends. Then those people are elated with joy. Thousands of people desecrate God's day to see that. Special trains run to those places where those games are played. Is that not very, very sad? Is it not laughable? In order that all spectators shall be able to see and follow that game easily, they build large buildings in the shape of a bow around an open field. Long rows of benches are placed around the field. The front benches are the lowest. Going toward the rear, they are placed higher and higher, so that the people that sit upon the last bench can look over all the heads to the open space in the center where the game is played. Now then, centuries ago, those stadiums were already there. Such stadiums were built in all large cities of the immense Roman Empire. But in those days, those buildings were not called stadiums, but amphitheaters. The open field in the center was then called the arena. The Romans also were very fond of sports and games. Then the people went by the thousands to the amphitheater to watch those games in the arena. When the Christians were so horribly persecuted and were often cast before the wild animals, then they also used those amphitheaters for that. Then thousands and thousands of Romans went to watch the death struggle of the Christians. They thought that was nice. They enjoyed that. Cages were built on the side of the arena, beneath the front seats in which the wild animals were locked up. Those cages were separated from the arena with heavy iron slides. When they raised such a slide, then the wild animals entered the arena where the Christians stood. This must be kept in mind, for in the following chapters we shall read often about those amphitheaters and arenas. At any rate, now we know what they are. One day, thousands of people, men and women, are seated in the huge amphitheater which was built in Rome. All are looking toward the open space in the center, the arena, which is clearly visible to everyone. It is still as death. In breathless suspense, they are all waiting for the things that shall happen. In the center of the arena stands a man, a solitary man, lost in the great space. He stands there calmly. He has crossed his arms upon his breast. A smile is upon his lips. The eyes of all those thousands of spectators are fixed upon him, but that does not seem to disturb him. Who is that man, and why does he stand there? That man is a Christian, and he stands there to be torn to pieces by a lion. His name is Glabori. Formerly he was governor of Rome, but because he had forsaken his heathen religion and had gone over to Christianity, the cruel Domitian had him arrested, and now he shall be torn to pieces by a lion in the sight of all the people. They have purposely withheld food from that lion for a few days, so that now that animal is ravenously hungry. Listen, there sounds the dull roar of that hungry lion through the breathless silence. The long benches of the large amphitheater are occupied to the last seat. A shudder runs through the bodies of the many spectators when the frightening roar breaks the deathly silence. They shudder. At the motion of the emperor, who has also come to watch the death of Glabori, a few servants raise the heavy slide. After a few moments, the huge lion enters the arena. For a moment, the animal blinks at the glaring sunlight. Then he sees that solitary man standing, and sneaking, he approaches Glabori. When the lion has come quite close, that beautiful animal crouches. His tail sweeps the ground. Everyone holds his breath. One moment, and then suddenly, that ferocious animal takes a tremendous leap. With one blow of his razor-sharp claws, he shall strike down Glabori and kill him. But oh, just look. At the last moment, Glabori jumps to the side. Thereby, the jump of the brute fails, and it misses its prey. And then before the lion can get itself ready for a new leap, the brave Christian hurls himself on the back of the lion. Vainly the lion tries to shake Glabory off. He clings firmly to the wild animal. While roaring and with Glabory upon his back, the lion runs around the arena. But Glabory holds fast, and with his hands and feet, the Christian inflicts various wounds to the lion. This terrible conflict lasts a half hour. The thousands of spectators hold their breath. How shall that turn out? Who shall be victorious? The lion is so unequally strong. But God gives strength and endurance to the brave Glabory. After half an hour, Glabory stands up, and the lion lies dead on the ground. No one had expected that. God has saved Glabory. According to the laws of those days, he is now a free man. The masses, which first thirsted for his blood, now applaud the hero enthusiastically. Glabory leaves the arena as victor. The sightseers hurry home, busily discussing that which has happened. Emperor Domitian also returns to his palace. He is dissatisfied. He had not reckoned on that, and he has no intention to let Glabory at liberty. Soon he had the former governor of Rome arrested again, and now, at his command, Glabory is beheaded. In that way the martyr entered eternal glory. Behold, he is one of the many martyrs who have been put to death by Domitian. But here God proved that he is stronger than the wild animals. It is true, Glabory was killed, but God received the honor because all over Rome was spoken about the God of Glabory, the God of the Christians, and about the brave Glabory. Many Christians have been put to death in various ways by Domitian. The Lord allowed that so that his name would be glorified thereby. I could tell much more about that, but that would become too difficult, and besides, it would become too extended. Domitian was finally murdered in his own palace. Some writers tell us that his own wife had him killed, and that happened in this way. I have already told you that Domitian trusted no one. Only a little child was allowed to play in his presence. One day, that little boy found a note. While hopping and skipping, he ran to his mother, the wife of Domitian. She read the note, and she frightened terribly, because that note contained a number of names of people that had to be put to death. They would become new victims of Domitian. At the top she read her own name. Thus Domitian had in mind to have his own wife killed. Is it any wonder that the Empress frightened terribly when she noticed that her own name was at the top? Thus not one moment was she sure of her life. Her life hung on a silken thread. She took immediate steps and warned her friends and acquaintances. That same evening, Domitian was killed in his room. He did not get a splendid burial. On the contrary, a few servants buried him quietly. That was the terrible end of the cruel Domitian. after his death, the persecution of the Christians ceased. Also after his death, the Apostle John was returned from Patmos to his congregation at Ephesus. The Church of the Lord obtained some rest again for a while, but that rest did not last long, because